Shy John, and this is the Weekly News in Review. Today is Tuesday, September 11th, 2012. It is the anniversary of 11 years ago of 9/11. In breaking news, Yahoo alerts Obama on 11th anniversary of 9/11. Our country is safer and our people are resilient. We have Obama and the First Lady visit Arlington National Cemetery today to mark the 11th anniversary of 9/11 attack. In further news, Pakistani police officer says 21 people killed in Lahore when fire rips through shoe factory. We have also happening this week in Yahoo News, U.S. hands over formal control of Bagram prison to the Afghan government. Yemeni officials say airstrike has killed al-Qaeda's number two leader in Yemen. German High Court rejects call to postpone decision on European bailout measures. Turkish media reports casualties in an explosion at a police station in Istanbul. Yemeni officials say bomb blast misses defense minister, killed a number of bystanders. Tropical storm Leslie begins moving inland over Newfoundland in Canada. Egyptian officials say Mubarak's last prime minister, Ahmed Shafik, referred to trial on corruption. In the month of August, campaign donations were more for Barack Obama than in the campaign coffers for the Republican Party. This from NPR News. Apparently, $111 million was donated to the Republican Party, while $114 million were donated to Barack Obama's efforts. Larry Flint is offering $1 million in exchange for Romney's financial records. Now, I had a figure here of 23.5 million people currently unemployed via compiled government statistics. Now, what that comprised of is 12.8 million unemployed, 8.2 million part-time seeking full-time employment, and 2.5 million not working, have looked in the last year but have not looked in the past 4 weeks. Now, how they garner those statistics remains to be seen, do you not think? Now, that 12.8 million unemployed, I think that is 12.8 people currently collecting unemployment checks, rather like myself. At the end of my unemployment fund, I'm going to run out of checks. Then I guess I will become the 2.5 million not working, looked within the past year, but not in the last 4 weeks. Well, I'm still avidly looking. So keep your ears open, people. Now, another little statistic I was going to throw against that 23.5 million. Here on Wikipedia, the demographics of the United States. As of 2012, the United States has a total resident population of 314,327,425, making it the third most populous country in the world. It is a very urbanized population, with 82% residing in cities and suburbs as of 2008. The worldwide urban rate is 50.5%. This leaves vast expanses of the country nearly uninhabited. California and Texas are the most populous states, as the mean center of United States population has consistently shifted westward and southward, but New York City is the most populous city in the United States. So that's where all those unemployed people are hanging out. Huh? Now, to add to that, I have a little video for you. This is only 1 minute and 42 seconds long. And this actually happened at the Republican Party convention. This lady stepped up to the dais and summed up Obamacare in one sentence. Now, this is yet to be vetted, so let's see just how accurate this is.
So, let me get this straight. This is a long sentence. We're going to be gifted with a health care plan we are forced to purchase and find if we don't, which purportedly covers at least 10 million more people without adding a single new doctor, but provides for 16,000 new IRS agents written by a committee whose chairman says he doesn't understand it, passed by a Congress that didn't read it but exempted themselves from it, and signed by a president who smokes with funding... Same sentence. With funding administered by a Treasury chief who didn't pay his taxes, for which we will be taxed for 4 years before any benefits take effect by a government which has already bankrupted Social Security and Medicare, all to be overseen by a Surgeon General who is obese and financed by a country that's broke. So what the blank could possibly go wrong?
All right, well, enough of that. Now, I had one more article that I did want to share with you. Oh, maybe a couple of more if I had time. Maybe I can put some on my regular show. This particular one is from The Guardian, Elections 2012. This is shaping up to be the most racially polarized U.S. election ever. As their once core demographic diminishes, Republicans are going to any lengths to capture and keep the white vote. As Republicans were promoting themselves as a multiracial party from the platform in Tampa 2 weeks ago, an ugly incident on the convention floor suggested not everyone had got the memo. From a podium, a range of speakers of Haitian, Mexican, Cuban, and Indian descent spoke of how their parents had overcome huge barriers so they could succeed in the U.S. In the audience, a successful black woman who works for CNN was being pelted with peanuts by a convention goer who said, "This is how we feed the animals." The tension between the projection of a modern, inclusive, tolerant party and the reality of a sizable, racially intolerant element within its base, pining for the restoration of white privilege, is neither new nor accidental. Indeed, in no small part explains the trajectory of the Republican Party for almost the last half century. In his diary, Richard Nixon's chief of staff, Bob Haldeman, described how his boss spelled out the racial contours of a new electoral game plan to win Southern and suburban whites over to the Republican Party in the wake of the Civil Rights era. In quotes, "You have to face the fact that the whole problem is really the blacks," Nixon told him. "The key is to devise a system that recognizes that white not appearing to, recognizes that white not appearing to." That's what it says. This could be the final hurrah for what became known as Nixon's Southern strategy in what is shaping up to be the most racially polarized election ever. Black support for the Republican Party literally cannot get any lower. A recent Wall Street Journal poll had 0% of African Americans saying they intend to vote for Romney. At 32%, support among Latinos is higher but still remains pathetically low, given what Republicans need to win 40% and what they have had in the past. In 2004, George W. Bush won 44%. As a result, the party of Lincoln is increasingly dependent on just one section of the electorate, white people. To win, Romney needs 61% of the white vote from a white turnout of 74%. That's a lot. In 2008, John McCain got 55% from the same turnout. "This is the last time anyone will try to do this," one Republican strategist told the National Journal, and Republican consultant Anna Navarro told the Los Angeles Times, "Where his numbers are right now, we should be pressing the panic button." There are two main reasons for this panic. The first is that the system Nixon referred to is now recognizable by most, particularly with a black president in the White House. As people have become more attuned to the frequency of the dog whistles, the tone has necessarily become more shrill. During the primaries, Rick Santorum told a crowd in New Hampshire, "I don't want to make black people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money. I want to give them the opportunity to go out and earn the money." Newt Gingrich branded Obama the food stamp president just a few weeks ago in a clear nod to the birthers who insist Obama was not born in the U.S. The party's nominee Mitt Romney went to Michigan and joked, "No one's ever asked to see my birth certificate. They know that this is the place that we were born and raised. This is rhetorical peanut throwing. When everyone can hear it, you transition from a dog whistle to a straight-up whistle." Second, with white people destined to become a minority in a few decades, which they already are in Los Angeles, the strategy is no longer an anchor, but a milestone. Tying Republican fortunes to the white vote made electoral sense in the early 70s. Since 1980, the white share of the electorate has fallen in every consecutive election bar one, 1996, when Ross Perot ran. The more black and Latino voters the Republican alienate, the more white voters they need to replace them. The trouble is they are fishing for a larger number in a smaller pool, which demands ever more juicy bait. "The demographics race, we're losing badly," said Senator Lindsey Graham, acknowledging the problem. "We're not generating enough angry white guys to stay in business for the long term." We're not generating enough angry white guys to stay in business for the long term. That's some very pithy stuff, but that's not for want of trying. In just one example, the New York Times' Thomas Edsall and analyzes a Romney ad lambasting Obama's health care reform. The ad states, "You paid into Medicare for years, every paycheck. Now when you need it, Obama has cut $716 billion for Medicare. Why? To pay for Obamacare. The money you paid for your guaranteed health care is going to a massive new government program that is not for you." Leave aside the fact that the ad is judged by PolitiFact as only half true, and that the Republican vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan proposed a budget that would cut a similar amount for Medicare without health care reform. More than three quarters of Medicare recipients are white. More than half of those without health insurance are not white. By linking the two in this way, Obamacare thereby becomes a transfer of resources from hardworking white retirees to indigent minority ethnic people. Meanwhile, Larry McCarthy, who produced the now infamously racist Willie Horton ad for George H.W. Bush's campaign in 1988, is working for one of the super PACs backing Romney. Describing the evolution of the Republicans' racial appeal, the late Lee Atwater, one-time chair of the Republican National Committee and member of the Reagan administration, said in 1981, "You start out in 1954 saying, N-word, N-word, N-word. By 1968, you can't say the N-word. That hurts you. Backfires. So you say stuff like forced busing and states' rights. You're getting so abstract now that you're talking about cutting taxes. And all these things you're talking about are totally economic things, and a byproduct of them is that blacks get hurt worse than whites." Obviously sitting around saying, "We want to cut this much more abstract than even the busing thing, and have a hell of a lot more abstract than N-word, N-word," end quote. Reflecting on her experience in Tampa, Patricia Carroll, the CNN camerawoman who had peanuts thrown at her, said, "I can't change these people's hearts and minds. This should be a wake-up call to black people. People were living in euphoria for a while. People think we've gone further than we have." Gary Yonge, Guardian in the UK, Sunday, 9th of September. And one more thing we have, a little editorial comment. This is from my friend Shoshana Edwards, who writes on Friday near Hillsboro, Oregon. "A cruise missile costs $600,000. Let's see if we can reduce that number to understandable terms. That's 120,000 loaves of artisan bread. It's roughly 172,000 gallons of milk. It is 916 average Mississippi monthly mortgage payments, 232,000 children could have a 24-count box of Crayolas for each cruise missile. According to Socks for Life, you could get 46,000 plus three per pair packages of cotton socks. Since 1991, that we know of, 1,562 cruise missiles have been used in warfare, not all of them the $600,000 variety. Many were far more costly. The best estimates I have been able to identify state that currently the U.S. Navy has a stockpile of 3,500 cruise missiles of all variants. Of course, the actual number is no doubt layered under many levels of secrecy. Just those 3,500 missiles that we know of have an estimated value of $2.6 billion. I have neither the energy or ability to translate that number into real-world terms. What I do want to know is, who are we defending ourselves against with over 3,500 weapons of mass destruction, which don't even include the ICBMs, the chemical and biological weapons, the B-52s, the stealth bombers, the drones, and on and on and on. What is out there beyond our shores that is so dangerous we must bankrupt our schools, starve our children, let our bridges and roads fall into decay, and betray our contract with the most vulnerable amongst us? When the majority of our money goes toward the practice of making war, the practice of killing people, it saps the national soul. We become toilers at the gates of destruction rather than creators of greater good. This must stop, and it can begin with each of you. You can refuse to mouth the platitudes. Turn your eyes to other more palatable targets. Refuse to send your sons and daughters to the killing fields. Demand that we build our nation and leave nation building elsewhere to the citizens of those countries. You can turn away from fear and paranoia and embrace love and creativity. Does anyone else remember the song, "Let There Be Peace on Earth, and Let It Begin with Me"? There was more news. I had even more to contribute, and I will gather it together and bring it to you next week. So once again, DJ Shy John, here at the studios of www.killradio.org, and I'll see you next week. Thank you.